No, you're very welcome.
Stand out.
Stand out with me, Ian O'Connell. I'm delighted to say that my guest this week on Stand Out with Me, Ian, is one of Kerry's most well-known names, Billy Keane. Billy is the son of the legend John B. Keane. He's also known widely as one of Ireland's greatest writers and a publican whose bar goes back generations. Sit back and enjoy the show. Thanks a million for coming on today, Billy.
Not at all, buddy.
I like to bring on my guests kind of back to the start before, so it's kind of back to their childhood. What was your earliest memories of growing up in Listowel?
Well, even though I was a very smart child, I have no memory of my birth. But I was told I was born on the day Listowel won the North Kerry Championship. They won the minor, senior and intermediate on the same day. And I was born about 100 metres from the football pitch. And apparently the game was going on when I was being born. Listowel Limits brought off the treble. So I was like kind of a prophet. I was kind of like the saviour of the Limits the day I was born. And I have a great record in North Kerry football. I was born the day the Limits won the North Kerry Championship. I played in the North Kerry Championship winning team, and I was the manager of a North Kerry Championship winning team. But I have no memory of that day, so I didn't answer your question. I think my earliest memories would be, I have this very vague one of being maybe 3 years of age, down by the bank of the river in Listowel, and my dad lifts me up in his arms, and I'm looking at him, and it's a sunny day. I remember that because I was down there walking lately during a sunny day, and it kind of came back to me again, you know. But some of the other memories, I remember my first day in school fairly well. I remember looking at a fella who was up in a ladder and saying hello to him. His name was Mickey and Carey. And he was always telling us stories about a cat called Tibbles. And Tibbles could talk. And it was my nickname for a good few years, Tibbles, because I was talking about him so much when I was a kid. The lads picked up on him. So Mickey was there, and I remember looking at him and waving at him as I was going up to school with my mother hand in hand. And Mickey had such a sad face on it that he knew I was going to be going up that same place for the next 14 years. So he knew what was in store for me. And of course, I was delighted to be heading off. So that's one of my very early memories, you know, as a really small boy. Some of the other memories then, I remember my grandfather very vaguely. He died when I was 6. I remember him telling me stories out of a cowboy book called Roy Rogers. And he was reading the stories, and Roy Rogers was the hero. So that's a lovely memory to have. It's the only memory I have of him. But I can actually see it now when I'm talking to you, you know.
Boy.
I'm kind of thinking pictures sometimes. You know, some people think in words and figures, but I think in pictures. And I like, if I'm writing something, I actually visualize the scene in my head like a photograph or like a movie, you know. It's that's the way I think. And sometimes I see those things. Maybe and I've had no Guinness this morning. It's too early in for that. So it's something. It's just the way my head is. The way my head is wired, you know.
It's great to have that memory with him, especially when, like you said, he passed away when you were 6. Were you into any sports at the time? Was you a footballer?
Oh, I was. Yeah, I was a fanatic. I wrote a poem lately. It was on up for the match about the first kick. You know, the kick.
Brilliant.
My mum was telling me that I was kicking like mad anyway when I was a baby. My mum used to tell me that. No, I was into sport from as far as I can remember. You know, kicking the ball up and down our hall. We had a tiny hall there upstairs over the pub. You know, that was our home. We were a bit like the chickens, you know. We were free-range kids. We just wandered in and out of there the whole time. The back way was our stadium just at the back of the pub. Like that time in William Street, where we came from in Listowel, there was loads of children. I don't think there's any child living in William Street now. They've all moved out of the city centre, as one of the lads calls it. You would have had the likes of the Sextons, for example. You know, there were a few of them played for Ireland, Johnny Sexton's dad. Then, you know, you'd have the Moriartys. There was 6 or 7 of them.
Yeah.
There was, you know, there was maybe, then we had Charles Street, that came down to play us in the games, and there was some of those families, the Tubes, there'd be 8 of them, and all the families were big, the Cowles was 6 or 7 of them, and all the families used to come down to play in the Backway Stadium. And you were kind of thrown out there when you were about 4 years of age, you know, and that was it then. Like you were kind of reared, you were reared in the back way, like I said, free range kids. And as we got a bit older, maybe not that old, maybe up to 8 or 9, we'd go out in the morning, in the summertime especially, and we'd come back instinctively. None of us had a watch or a phone at when we were hungry, and that'd be for the dinner. The dinner was served at 12:30 on the dot, and then back out again playing football or whatever, and we'd play until it got dark and my mother would have to send for us, and she'd be trying to run the pub and she'd come out and we'd be in the middle of a game and we'd be saying, "Ah, no ma'am, can we play more?" And there were savage games out there, you know. Some of the people who played out there, for example, in the back was Johnny Kiernan, the runner. He was a few years older than us, but he was the man that, except for a fellow called Ty Moriarty, invented a game called Gate to Gate, where you bang the ball off two gates on either side of the big back way there. And there was a fellow called Richie Truten who died Lord Mercy a few years ago. He was a climber. Richie could get up over the high walls into McKenna's Mill at the back of it in Timber Yard, and he'd be in and out in a shot to get the ball when it was kicked too high over the wall. So like it was an amazing place. It was the Backway Stadium, we used to call it, you know.
And it was
very early on, it was out there, you know.
It was actually this morning I was talking to someone and we were saying how different it is. Even when I was growing up myself, like the phones and stuff wouldn't have been a big thing. We'd always be out in the estate, you know, playing football and messing around. But like these days, it's all iPads and computers and stuff and stuff. Like you were saying there, you lived above the bar and out the back. You used to go playing. As a young fella, I read somewhere that you were saying you were a barman since you were 10 years old.
Yeah, as you can see, I haven't changed very much in the meantime. Yeah, I was a barman when I was about 10. It started off, you know, like it's a family pub, you know, and so at the busy times you'd collect a few glasses. But we'd be hanging around there anyway. We were kind of babysat by the customers and things, you know. But my mother, you know, there could be mayhem in the house. You know, the brothers would be there playing football and dad would be upstairs trying to write. My mother could be 10 months pregnant and trying to keep it all together. And, you know, she had the morning sickness and it's hereditary because I get it myself sometimes as well. And so you'd be kind of pressed into action. But the kitchen was right next to the bar. So we just ran out of the kitchen into the bar and helped out a bit. So you'd be serving away, you know. It was a great education, really. My mother had a great expression, and I'd say it applies to you, Ian, as much as anyone. It was a thing called shop face. I've spoken about it before, but S-H-O-P face. And it's where no matter what's going on, you put on the smile and you fake it till you make it. And you say, well, how's the going, Ian? And how's everything with you? And how's the mother-in-law? And you make the small talk. And bit by bit, no matter what mayhem is going on in your head, the shop face kind of sneaks up in you imperceptibly or subconsciously, and it gets you into good form. And before you know it, there you are in great form, and everything is good with the world, and it just gets you by and gets you on. It's something I always use, you know. I didn't have to use it this morning, though, Ian. I was looking forward to this for a few weeks, so there was no problem with that.
No, I totally agree with you, what you say about the shop face, and it's so true. Everybody has a day that they have to put on that face. I was reading that your dad, John B, he'd attract the characters to the bar, and your mom, she'd be the woman to kind of give advice to. Was it like it was inevitable that it would come to your turn to kind of run the bar? How many generations does it go back?
It only goes back two, really. There was my dad, his dad was a teacher, and there was a big family of them there. They lived in Church Street. And my mom then came from Knocknagoshan on the Castle Island Road. She nearly had dual citizenship. And they had a farm and a small country shop. And my mom worked in the shop. So we had that background from my mom. My dad went to England for 4 years, and he made a bit of money over there. He came home a few times a year to see my mum. She was a hairdresser then in Castle Island, and she got her bit of money together. So it was just, I'm just the next generation, but there's 68 years we've been there in the pub, you know. Sometimes I think it's a long time, but then I look at some of the other pubs in the store and they're there 110 years, like Mike DePies and Joe Broder's, and still in the family, which is fantastic. But no, 68 years. And one of the things is that we've had a writer in the pub for 68 years. So Dad, first of all, obviously he'd be a different league, and then yours truly, you know. And I told this one before, I don't know if you ever heard me saying it, but look, we'll say it again, Ian. Everyone repeats themselves.
No, say it again.
When one of my books came out, this fella wrote, he was a blogger or something there, and he says, I've just read Billy Keane's new book, and all I can say is that John B. Keane must have taken the wrong baby home from the hospital. So, but we still had a right here for 68 years, and I don't think there's too many pubs have that. But only the two generations. So we're not sure what's going to happen next now, because my children, they're great to help out in the bar, and they all worked as when they were students, and you know, in the bar, and I couldn't ask for more from them. But they all have their own jobs and careers now. So I think the only hope is the grandchildren. We have four of them now. So there's one of them living with us at the moment, Hugo. I'm waiting for him to bust in, because he bursts in. He doesn't walk into rooms, he bursts in. So so maybe he might take it up. He runs at about 100 miles an hour. He's a small fella, never stops talking, with curly hair, and he bangs into walls. He goes so fast. So maybe in 20 years' time, Ian, he'll be serving you a pint in John B's. So we don't know how long more to keep going, but I keep going as long as I can. I've no notion of retiring for a while yet, anyway.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome back to Stand Out with me, Ian O'Connell. I'm here today with Billy Keane. If you're just joining us, you can get the full interview on the Radio Kerry website in the podcast section after the show. Or you can also get this interview, as long as all the interviews I've done so far, on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Stand Out with Ian O'Connell. That's, like you said, it seems like for ages, but when you look back, it's only a short amount of time. What was it like during COVID-19? Because obviously, I remember being in the bar there before my accident, and it's always a bar that there'd be people chatting amongst, and there'd be story kind of telling and stuff. What was it like during COVID when it was shut?
It was tough. It was tough, to be honest with you. COVID was no time for extroverts, and I suppose I'd be an extrovert, even though I have my the moments when I like to shut myself off as well. But generally speaking, I prefer people's company. I found it very hard, especially walking into the bar. See, there's no one living there now most of the time anyway, and
really,
you walk in and it's like a silent, empty stage, as Mickey McConnell, the great songwriter, wrote, and it was tough. And then sometimes some of the other places were open because they had food and things, and we were closed, and it was tough, just that you couldn't open up. No, it was terrible, to be honest. I thought I'd the first couple of weeks was great. It was like a holiday, the weather was
yeah.
And the first summer wasn't too bad, you know, it happened in the summer, but there was a January, February, March, and I thought they were the longest 3 months of my life, and I didn't like it at all. Found it tough mental health wise as well, you know. I just felt that it was, but I, you know, I did the Today Show with Daithí and Mar. I went up and down to Cork once a week to do that, so that was the focus. And
it was on a Friday, wasn't it?
It was on a Friday, so that kind of got you out and about a bit. And I was writing for The Independent all the time, and I was writing a book as well, so I was kind of busy enough. But no, I missed the company, I just missed the crack. And I used to find myself walking around the park, which down in the soil known as the Cow's Lawn. That was fantastic. You'd meet people down there, and you know, you'd always have a chat with someone. I had a few buddies, and we met and we'd walk around, and that was a bit of a laugh. But I found the nights long, you know, you'd miss, like, if you're kind of trained into being at a certain place at a certain time every night for 25, 30 years, it's very hard to wean yourself off of that. And I didn't, and I really found the nights long. And you know, sometimes I used to let my my thoughts run away with themselves, but it took a while just to adjust. That it wasn't too bad near the end of it, because you kind of knew things were getting better. But no, it was tough. There's no point saying otherwise. I found it very tough.
It was, and like you said, mentally, the first few weeks it was like a holiday. It was great. But then, it was, like you said, it was during the summer. But then the kind of second wave was during the winter, and
it was terrible. Yeah.
Do you think that the bar kind of industry and the public houses, is it on a decline over recent years, or how would you see it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's gone back a bit. I'm not too bad, you know. I suppose we're lucky in that we're in a town. You know, there's always someone passing by, and I have a great name over the door, and that's always helpful.
Yeah.
And I have my own profile, and we've regulars coming in, and that. And they don't, most of them don't have to get to travel 5 miles home or whatever. But it is tougher. A lot of it is down to, I think, just the whole package, getting the taxi, getting paying for the drinks, maybe the babysitter, that much together. But I still think the pubs are worthwhile, and I'd always stick up for pubs, because that drinking at home, like, is not good for you. Like, no. We were always told when we were young, never drink on your own and never drink at home. Now, some people have to have a drink at home because they might have small babies and have a glass of wine Friday night or whatever, and that's fine. But if you can at all, try and get out. You meet the people and you connect, and there's a bit of a laugh, and it's not just the same faces every time. And you dress up and you make something out of yourself. And, you know, it's very good for the head, I think, to get out into the pub. Yeah, the pubs are in decline. One thing that happened, though, was... the government made mistakes during the whole COVID thing. The nursing homes thing wasn't well handled, but we did get compensation, you know, while we were closed. We did get money from the government, and there was help with wages, which had kept people in jobs, and that spread money around. So, but for that, most of us would be closed. I think it's important to say that we did get handouts. I have no shame or anything in saying I accepted them gladly, and I don't know what I'd be open now but for those, you know.
Yeah. And and like you were saying, the government helped kind of a bit during, which obviously kept a lot of different bars around Ireland in business and stuff that are still open today. Do you think like you were saying, you the name above the door, and that kind of that would attract people alone, do you think for every public house and pub, do you think it's best for them to play at their own strengths? Like, some is known for their music, more might be known for their carvery. Do you think it's important to have a brand in your own
pub? You have to play to your strengths. You know, we do a bit of pub theatre now, Tuesday and Thursday nights in the summertime, and that's great, and we've a nice crowd in for that, you know, especially Tuesday and Thursdays midweek, you know. And we're good at it, you know, and it's a great show, and we have big names who come in just basically to support the pub and to have a bit of fun, like Mickey McConnell, the songwriter, Gabriel Fitzmaurice, the poet, actors like John Looney, Sean Moriarty, Laura Shine, Paddy McElligott, you know, they come in, and Cathy Healy, and they'll do a bit from some of my dad's plays, or I do a bit of my own stuff. Owen Hand, the famous soccer manager, sings the odd song for us and things. So we have great support. There's a community support for the pub as well. So that's what we're good at. Like, I couldn't do food now. Like, it gives me all I can do to cook my own dinner. I'm too careless a person to be a chef. And then someone would come in and they'd say, there's too much salt in my gravy. And I'd get cranky, and I'd say, how am I going to take it out? How can I take salt out? Like, so I just think I wouldn't be able to have to be that good every day and have the people's dinner ready and have it perfect every day would be beyond me, you know. Whereas the kind of a pub we have where you come in and have a few drinks, it suits my style better, you know. I'm not disorganized by any means. I got much better in recent years. You see, I was kind of spoiled for a long time. My mother was with us until 7 years ago. She passed away. So she was a great organizer, and she was the one that did all the worrying. So when she passed away, emotionally, it was massive, because she lived in the pub. You know, it's still our home. And that was massively emotional, you know. But also, and this might sound selfish, but it's not meant to be. It was just to have someone to sound out with about, you know, kind of like list all races is coming up now. And
yeah.
What will we order? What about staff? What will we do with this? What will we do with that? And she was very good. And you'd never, like, there's more, it takes more to organize a small pub than to run the EU sometimes. I'm not exaggerating. There's a massive amount. You'd be so surprised. There's paperwork, there's details, and there's an awful lot to be done. But she was great for that, and she was able to kind of piece it all together. And what I forget to do, she'd pick up on it, and we work very well together. So I'd miss that a lot. But at the same time, you know, there's a great feeling of independence having your own pub too. You know, I can kind of open up there, and like I'm the Kieran Corley behind the bar, and I let them all talk. And if someone is out of order, I'll pull them up on it. And,
the hammer.
You know, we will. So, like, there's a great future in pubs, but as you're so right, and you have to play to your strengths. Some places are doing fantastic food now, and that's their lifeline. And more like me, I think all we do is talk, really. I put on a bit of a show where we have sing songs and we have a bit of music. It's a performance place. Like, it's, I see myself as on the stage when I go in there. I like that. I enjoy it. It's kind of, it's what I do. And just, my dad said one time, I was after having a few misfortunes in life, and my dad said one time, Bill, it's the bar for you, it is all you're fit for. And he meant it as a kind of a compliment. Someone said to me that, no, he was just saying you can't, but you need to be very smart and very skillful with life, a good manager, and a psychiatrist, psychologist, a shrink to succeed behind the bar. A bit of everything is needed, you know. A bit of an accountant. You know, you need a rounded skill set to survive.
Absolutely. I was working in the Killarney Park in Killarney behind the bar before my accident. But someone taught me one day, they said, if you know how to pull a pint, you can work anywhere in the world. And do you think that's true?
Absolutely. We have someone brilliant, Abby McMahon, great footballer as well. And Abby is, she just came in for a few weeks there lately. She's a teacher. She's going to Canada for 2 years, and she can get a job in Canada, you know. And John Bees is a good old reference to have as well, you know, and she's fantastic. And I miss her greatly. But yeah, you can go anywhere in the world. There's a couple of things. If you learn how to play an instrument, or if you're able to do a bit of bar work, you know, the only thing that fazes me is cocktails. I hate making them. Someone said to me one time, do you do cocktails? And I said, yeah, I'll give you a pint of lager shandy. But it's like trying to do all that mixing around, and it takes ages, and you know, it does my head in. But if you could learn how to make cocktails and pull a pint, you'll get a job anywhere. And it's the same skills apply, and it's the best education in the world. You know, all my now work behind the bar. You know, my brothers, my sister, then my own children, we all walk behind the bar. It's a great, as you know, Ian, from the park. Of course, that's one of the best high end hotels in the world. Never mind Ireland or Canada.
Only the best for me, boy.
Only the best for you, Ian. Yeah. So it's a great education, because you get used to talking to people. You see them at their best, and sometimes at their worst, unfortunately. And you know, it gets you talking no matter what. I think you probably got your interviewing skills behind the bar, you know, and picked up on it, you know. But you're one of those kind of cute interviewers as well. You're getting all the stuff out of me without being too pushy. That's the really good ones. The really good ones, that's how they operate, you know. So.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome back to Stand Out with me, Ian O'Connell. I'm here today with Billy Keane. Billy has a very interesting story, and if you've missed the start of the interview, you can get it straight after the show on the Radio Kerry website in the podcast section, or you can now get this show as well as all the interviews I've done so far on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Stand Out with Ian O'Connell. I want to just touch on, say, your own writing and John B. Keane, obviously, and stuff. Are you still writing in the Independent two or three times a week, or is that?
I am. I just write once a week now. I write every, it goes in every Saturday, and I've been at it now for over 21 years, I think it is. But I took a break there back around February. I just had enough. I woke up one morning and I just can't do this. And I just took a break for a while. And I'm back now. And I took a break for 2 or 3 months. And it was the best thing I ever did. I think I'm writing better than ever now. And
everyone needs that break.
I needed it, yeah. I was kind of going nonstop. Like, I missed 1 week in the 21 years. And that was... one of the girls was getting married abroad, and she said, "Don't write anything this week. We just need you to be." So I didn't. So I missed 1 week, and eventually it kind of grew me down. But a lot of that was COVID related as well. You know, all the stuff that was going on.
Yeah.
We had to close at 8 o'clock at night, and we didn't know what was happening. And I think it all kind of got to me a bit. But the break did me good. And now, a friend of mine was saying to me, "You know, I remember saying to him, I have to write a column in the morning." And he said, that's not the way to speak. You say, I get to write a column in the morning. And whatever way he said it, it made a difference to me. I said, what a great privilege it was. And, you know, at the moment, I wrote a column a couple of weeks ago. And you can influence the world or your community or even just one or two in a small way. I wrote a column about embracing, you know, the people who've come here from the Ukraine. And there's a kind of a worrying trend. I hear these rumors being put about the Ukrainians, that is, they did that. Nearly all lies, you know. And yeah. I found them to be fantastic people. So it was a great opportunity to kind of say, look, these are the people we are here. You know, they're welcome to our country. They're going to enhance our country. They're not going to, you know, they're not dependent on us. But we will, in time, we'll say that was a great time when they came. And they can, you know, there's jobs that can't be filled at the moment, especially in different areas, and that they'd be a benefit to Ireland overall. So it gives you a chance. Now, there's probably lots of people listening who disagree, but that's my opinion, and I'm strong about it, and I don't see myself changing that anytime soon. So it gives you a great opportunity. And then there's more times you write, and it just gives people a laugh.
Yeah.
And it's lovely when they come up to you and say, I really got that last week, and I enjoyed that story, you know. And that's a great buzz, because I think half the time our role in life maybe is to maybe make people a little bit better off after they've met you or after they've read you, and leave them in a better state, a happier state, you know. And when I was doing the Today Show all through lockdown, I made sure I never mentioned COVID once. And I wanted people to get a bit of a laugh. There was a lot of people in nursing homes and different places, maybe couldn't get about. So I wanted to bring them out into the world and give them a bit of a laugh. So even I could have been very down myself some days, I always lifted it. And it was one of the things I'm kind of proud of, that I managed that for 2 years. And for the most part, people were in stitches a lot of the time, and more times they probably didn't get me that. But most people did, and that meant a lot to me, especially older people who couldn't get out and about. And I kind of felt, yeah, look, that was good work. No, well done. You did something right anyway, you know.
Would I be right in saying in 2016 you did you take all the good pieces and make the very best of Billy Keane into a book?
Yeah, I did actually, Ian. What I did was, I did the best of Billy Keane. And then a few years later, we did the very best of Billy Keane.
The very best. It'll be the very, very best XR.
Yeah, so it's a selection of the columns, and it's the easiest book you could ever write, because all you had to do was pick them out at the end and put it together. And, you know, it was great. It's great to have them all there. I have this thing, that if you have a book, get it published. There's no point leaving it inside in a drawer, and publishing is so hard to get done. I was lucky enough in that I had publishers always, but
it's my next target, write a book.
Sorry, Ian?
It's my next goal that I want to do, on to write a book.
Well, if you can write half as good as you can talk, it'll be no bother to you anyway.
Yeah, no,
Ian, yeah, do that. Donal Ryan is my favourite writer at the moment. I don't know if you've read Donal. He has a new book out. I have it right here in front of me. Joining when I read his books, is they're so good, it makes me feel inadequate. His new one is called The Queen of Dirt Island. And I read it through the middle of the night, because I was so worried about the characters, you know. So he wrote he writes in small pieces, you know. So, like, that's like I kind of got into that, just writing. You know, I might be too busy in the bar. You'll be tired as well from the bar. The bar is tiring, so I might write just 300 or 400 words, and all that adds up, you know. And before you know it, you have a book, you know. So, I have one coming out next year. I just sent off what I think is the final draft to the publisher, PJ Cunningham of Ballpoint Press. He's been my publisher from day one. He was the guy who gave me my break in sports journalism as well. He was the sports editor of the Indo at the time. So I sent him off the kind of final draft, and that was a great feeling. But he'd probably send it back 5 more times, but at least I have that much done. So a lot of that came out of lockdown, and I wrote it in small bits. But the last couple of days, with the snow races coming up, I said I have to get it done before the races. So I gave about 10-12 hours yesterday, the longest I've ever spent writing in one day, and I got it kind of sorted and done. Got a new end to it, which was a great feeling, because the other end was a bit sad. I wanted a happy one, you know, because I just thought we leave people better off than when we found them, which is kind of my motto, and I was gone against it by this old sad story for a while. So I got it off anyway. The name of the book is going to be controversial. Let's say PJ agrees with it. It's called The Woman Who Hasn't Had Sex for 39 Years. So really? That's bound to cause some bit of trouble. If nothing else, we'll sell it. But exactly. There's actually no sex in the book. So that'll cause something or other. So I'm looking forward to that coming out next year. And there's a lovely feeling. And you'll find this when your book comes out, Ian. And I hope I'm invited to the launch.
You will be. First invite.
And there's a lovely feeling. And a way of motivating yourself is to visualize your book, say, you know, you visualize your book is up there, you know, on the shelf, and yeah, it's there in front of you, and you walk into the bookshop and you see My Life Story by Ian O'Riordan, and it's there in front of you. Sorry, Ian O'Connell. Ian O'Riordan is a sports writer, and it's right in front of you, and you see your name up there in lights, and you're absolutely, it's a great feeling. It's one of the nicest feelings in the world. The worst feeling then is when someone slates it or something. Yeah. You get over that, because once you think it's good is the main thing, you kind of ignore some of them, you know.
There's going to be people out there waiting to criticise whatever you do in life.
There is, yeah, there is.
Before we finish up, I just want to touch on your dad and his legacy writing and stuff. And,
yeah,
you know, like, The Field was obviously a huge, massive success. What's your earliest memory of your dad writing, or you reading his
the writing was, he used to write in the house, you know, because like it was just this, you know, he wrote upstairs, and it was kind of mayhem, all right, 'cause it was very small upstairs, you know. There was three boys. Later on they built a bit out the back of the pub for the three boys, and kept my sister, who was the civilized one, kept her next to them in up over the pub. Now dad writing away, he used to sit up on a high stool and he'd write away there. And then at night, you know, you'd get up in the middle of the night and 3 or 4 in the morning, when I was a very small boy, he'd be writing up at the counter. And, you know, he worked very, very hard at it. And he was still a barman until The Field came out. My mother kind of put him up from behind the bar for the most part then. And she ran everything. We were getting a bit older then, we were able to help out. So they're the early memories. But one of my nicest memory is in our sitting room upstairs there, he was able to put his legs up in the mantelpiece from his from his chair, and he'd stretch out, and I'd go up in his lap, and I had a stutter, you know, when I was a young lad, I had a stutter. I still get the odd bit of one. And he'd put me up in his lap, and he'd say, "Read that now, Bill." So I'd be reading out his latest masterpiece, not knowing what I was doing, and I'd read it out for him. And it got me used to reading, and he really enjoyed it. And I could see he was thinking, and maybe I helped in a small way. When he heard it out loud, maybe he thought of changes or whatever he should make that, you know. So that's one of the nicest memories with the writing. Some of the other ones then would be when he had the plays would be on in Dublin. And, you know, one weekend he brought us to Crow Park for a football match Kerry were playing, and his play opened on the following day in the Gaiety Theatre or headquarters in Dublin. And he was there, and we were there, and there was big queues, and they were all coming up wanting to shake his hand and everything, and you know, and it was sold out. So I remember that, and I remember my auntie Peg, who was a fantastic woman. She lived in Dublin. You know, she's the auntie in Dublin. You know, the way you have an aunt in Dublin.
Yeah,
yeah. Visit and crash with her. And Auntie Peg pointed, lifted me up in her arms, and she pointed, and there was a sign that said "House Full." And I was maybe 7 or 8, and it dawned, you know, and how proud he was of that. So, and how good it was for him, because he got lashed in the early days. He was slated and criticized because he was an independent voice, you know.
Yeah.
And there he was. The people stood by him, whatever about the critics, you know.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome back to the last part of the show. If you're just joining us, I'm here with Billy Keane. If you've missed the start of the interview, you can get it straight after the show on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Stand Out with Ian O'Connell. Did a Cork couple have the official manuscript of the...
They did. They had one of the official manuscripts of the first production of Sive, and they gave it to us, and we gave it to the... To the Kerry Writers Museum, which is in the stall, well worth a visit. I was the chairperson there for 12 years when we were building it, and along with Jimmy Dean, and who was kind of the fundraiser. We managed, you know, Cara Trent runs it now, and she does a fantastic job. So that's a big thing in the stall. You know, the stall's a great spot. I'm going to show you around the next time you come over.
Go ahead.
You probably know it anyway, but I'm going to bring you on the secret tour of the stall. Ian, to be no man more welcome.
Before we finish up, do you know that the play was it refused in the Abbey or something?
Sive was refused by the Abbey. But Dad used to get so cross about it as the years, you know, he felt it was a bit of a that he was frozen out, and there was a lot of politics going on as well. Because he wrote about uncomfortable subjects at the time.
Yeah.
For example, there was a young girl who was basically being sold off. So that's 50, 60 years before the Me Too movement. And then he wrote about the way single moms were treated in Ireland that time, and wrote very forcibly. And, you know, and then that was, again, that's 50, 60 years before the mother and baby home scandals. So he was ahead of his time. I don't think the Abbey were able for him.
Yeah.
You know, they just couldn't handle him. And later they made it up and they put on productions of his plays. Including Sive, and that was a great day when we all walked in, you know, and Sive was on in the Abbey. And in a strange way, the Abbey was going very bad financially at the time, and Sive rescued the Abbey.
Really?
He had a fantastic run and went on tour all over Ireland. So in the end, as always, my dad had the last word. So he got his play on, you know.
That's the main thing. He had 18 plays, he had 22 works of writing and stuff. Do you have a favourite piece of writing or poetry that your dad done?
Yeah, my favourite is a play, and it's called Leo the Hiker, and it was about a fella, he ran off to England and left the family, and it's about his return and how he kind of, you know, why he ran away comes out, why he left, and also how he patches things up with his children. And it's a kind of a father-son moment at the end of it, you know, and where the son and the father have a chat, and the father says, the other son doesn't get on with him, and he says, in years to come, the father says, they'll say, when was that the young fella born, or when did we win the championship, or stuff like that. And he says, they'll say it'll be the year the Hiker Lacey came home. That was the character's name, the Hiker Lacey. But that line always stuck on me, you know, that it stuck in my head. And I love that play. And there's talk of a film about it, and I've been asked to do a screenplay, but I have very little experience at it. But I have someone to give me a hand, and we might do that. That'll be the next project as soon as we get this cursed book out. I won't say the name anymore, but as soon as we get that out, that'll be the next project. And it'll be a lovely way of kind of collaborating with your own dad and maybe keeping his memory alive as well.
Absolutely. Last question before we go on up for the match that time. I remember you telling the story, but I forget it. Was it about, I don't know, was it you or Pat Spillane, about a Kerry footballer and his appendix or something? He got him out.
That was, yeah. Yeah, that was the first time I was in Croke Park, and Dad.
I love that story.
It was the 1965 All Ireland football final, but 64-65 when Kerry and Galway. Galway won, unfortunately, but Bernie O'Callaghan had his appendix taken out about a week before the game, and didn't he come on anyway? And he almost scored the winning goal, you know. And I said, that kind of epitomised Kerry football at the time. But Dad lifted us over the turnstiles, and just to be there in Croke Park with him at the All-Ireland final, he was a great man in bringing us places, you know. You could be out all night coming home now, you know. He found it. He took a lot of stops coming home, you know. He used to have his stops like the halfway bar between the stall and Tralee, the famous halfway bar. He'd meet Charlie there, and then coming from Limerick, we used to stop in the Burdo Shocknesses, and we'd stop in Brusnan's, Con Brusnan's, and we might stop. You could stop in a few places, you know. It took him a while to get home, but that was part of the experience as well, you know. You'd have a good lot of orange by the time you got home, I put it to that way.
That's, it's great to have the memories, Billy. Thanks so much now for coming on, and I really appreciate it, and I know...
No, the honour is mine, Ian, thanks. We're very proud of you, and keep it going, and I look forward to that book.
I'll be over to the stall to you soon enough.
You will.
Now, unfortunately, that's all we have time for tonight. I hope you all enjoyed the show, and I really appreciate you tuning in as always. A massive thank you to Billy for coming on and sharing his story. I really enjoyed it, and I hope you all did too.